Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Geo Patterson. So, Admiral Nathan, Navy medicine would not accomplish much of its mission without a robust research and development portfolio. Would you tell us a little bit about the research priorities for Navy medicine, and how has it impacted the delivery of care?
Some of the most significant advances, I think, in peacetime care have come through the exploration and the research of issues, illnesses, and injuries that affect us in a wartime environment. We may be in the near term looking at a vaccine for malaria. Now, malaria is the number one infectious disease killer in the world. We don't think of that much in the United States, but it ravages other populations. Dengue fever, dysentery, certain encephalitises that are carried, West Nile and others that are carried through mosquitoes and through flies. The origins of our research start in trying to protect our troops, but this bleeds over into eventually protecting our peacetime. The model for trauma care in this country was based on our experiences in Vietnam. That's where we learned about the golden hour, and we learned about the having an actual trauma support center, such as shock trauma at Baltimore and other places. We're learning things now in this conflict through research and development of trauma care, be it clotting agents, be it artificial blood, body armor, tourniquet therapy, that will be on an ambulance today in a motor vehicle, a critical motor vehicle accident somewhere in the Beltway. So we're going to change lives just as a result of that research. Most of our research is done, of course, to try to figure out how to be better force protectors and or care responders for our troops and our crews, be they submarines and the environment of working in a submarine and the atmospheric and the pressure. When people go scuba diving for recreation in the Caribbean, the reason they know how far they can go and how much air they can breathe is because the U.S. Navy developed those tables years ago in trying to protect its divers from decompression illness. So these things carry over. I think we get a twofer in our research, especially our research overseas, where we have places where we embed in overseas countries. First of all, the countries may be an environment where these illnesses are prevalent, so we can really study them. Secondly, the engagement we get, the cooperation we get among the host nations is nothing but good. The partnerships that we have, sometimes in environments where they can be a little bit dicey and where the politics may be somewhat fragile, our relationships and the fact that our only agenda for being there is research and the advancement of science and the advancement of betterment of all people, including the host nation, really carries the day in many of these cases. And so I'm very proud of that part of it. But we have researchers just down the road at Walter Reed Bethesda who are looking at new and innovative ways to treat cancer, all the way to somebody who's looking at a mosquito in Lima, Peru, and determining how to create some sort of genetic variation so that the mosquito can no longer carry a certain disease. Yes, that's going to make a difference in the lives of our troops, but there's also going to be a young child born in the near future somewhere in the world who's not going to suffer something because of the Navy research that's going on.
I hadn't realized the R&D portfolio was another element of soft power. It's interesting. Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, and I think it's because and medical has always been a medical itself, military medicine itself has always been a great soft power tool in the toolkit because the agenda is health and wellness. And so often we can be a great icebreaker.
Admiral, Navy medicine has a significant track record of engaging in humanitarian missions and responding to disasters. Could you elaborate for a moment on Navy medicine's involvement in some of the most recent relief efforts? And to what extent does such engagement represent an extension of U.S. soft power?
When you look at Indonesia and how at one time that country had a pretty strong anti-American sentiment, they suffer a calamitous tsunami. And we send the Lincoln Battle Group there. We send the hospital ship Mercy there. They see American troops helping rebuild infrastructure, schools. They see American troops taking care of children, looking at disease and injury, and the sentiment changes because of goodwill. The Navy's motto, it's not Navy medicine's motto, it's the Navy motto. It's a global force for good. I think that appeals to young people. I think a young person today, the generation today, watching the ads on the TV or looking in a magazine or whatever, they're patriotic and they want to be part of the national defense and they're willing to be part of the national security and they're certainly willing and able to step up and fight when they have to in a hostile environment to protect, you know, our nation's interests. But they also like being part of something that leaves the world a little better place. And they like being part of something where we have ships that can bring war power when necessary, and we have ships that can bring tremendous compassion and healing when necessary. So I think that's one of our selling points. Yes, the research allows us to retain some very, very world-class scientists in the Navy because we have some very, very world-class and unique research environments.
Admiral, with the rising health care costs, the increased number of beneficiaries, and maintaining this long-term care responsibility for our medically retired warriors, your focus on the value is key in your decision-making. To that end, would you tell us more about your efforts to realize sustained value and elaborate on your concept of value being quality multiplied by capability, all divided by cost?
Great, great question. And I think this is what keeps CEOs of any major healthcare system awake right now. Whether you were talking to the CEO at Hopkins or Geisinger or Cleveland Clinic, how are we going to figure out how to improve access, improve health, and reduce costs? From the president on down, everybody's looking hard at how we can change the game, not only in military medicine, but in our private sectors and academic sectors as well. I believe that the answer lies in truly harnessing technology and creating more virtual care. Virtual medicine allows more health. What do I mean by that? We've become a nation that sort of has rewarded health care in the way we pay our system more than rewarding health. Most of our providers in this country get rewarded or paid by doing sort of more to a patient than less. It's not bad. It's just a system that's not predicated on really keeping the patient healthy. I like to tease and say we should be more like the 15th century Chinese who used to pay their physicians while they were healthy. And when they got sick, they stopped paying their doctors. So their doctors were vitally concerned with making sure they didn't get ill. We're trying to harness that in our organization and trying to look at new and innovative ways to reward and recognize our providers based on how healthy they keep their population. And then the risk is really on the healthcare organization to keep those people healthy, because if they don't, they're going to lose more money than make it. So how can you do this? You need a few ingredients. One is you need an electronic medical record. We have that in the military. Two, you need a population that's insured and can come to your hospitals and get your healthcare when they need it. We have that in the military. Three, you need providers that are rewarded for health and not necessarily that interested in patients becoming ill. We have that in our system. And I think all physicians, all providers want their patients to be as healthy as possible, but we're really trying to put the emphasis on health instead of health care. We have less people in our country now than we ever have who are able to join the military. We have many who are willing, but less who are able simply because of health issues at young ages or fitness issues at young ages, a variety of other reasons as well. But the bottom line is, strategically and medically, I need to alter people's healthcare choices.
So, Admiral, the patient-centered medical home represents a shift toward a more holistic approach to healthcare delivery. And with virtual healthcare, it's a nice segue. Would you tell us more about your efforts to implement this kind of healthcare model in Navy medicine? I believe it's called the Medical Home Port Program. How is it revitalizing your primary care system?
This is basically an environment where you can increase the continuity of care of a patient. What do I mean by medical home? You feel like you're at home when you're there. They know you. If you were to talk to many of our beneficiaries in military medicine over the last several years, many of them would say, once I get in to see you, the care is great, but sometimes it's hard to get in to see you. And secondly, sometimes when I get in to see you, there's a different person there, and I have to start all over from square one. And so I really would love to have my good old doc or that nurse who knows me since, you know, for 4 years. And we do too. We want that as well. Now, we're a rotational organization. Our people move and rotate. And so how do we combat that? So we've created Patient-Centered Medical Home, which is a pod of providers centered around a physician, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, perhaps an advanced duty corpsman, all of them who know you. Mm-hmm. One of them is available to you. Where this is working, we don't have it everywhere yet, but it's growing. But where it's working, you can reach one of them at all times. In addition, you communicate to them majority of the time through either a web-based, secure web-based system or through email or through an iPhone or whatever. You don't have to come in for everything. Harnessing the power of digital and telemedicine is critical. And I would add pivotal to the United States Navy because I need that more than any place else because I have so many medical facilities displaced all over the world. They're called ships. If I have a doctor on a ship that's in the South China Sea and he has a patient who comes to him and he thinks they're having a heart attack or a stroke or maybe some debilitating abdominal problem, I want to equip him with things where he can transmit the information back to a place like Bethesda or Portsmouth. And I can have a myriad of cardiologists, surgeons, OBGYN doctors, neurologists standing around looking at the images he's transmitting, looking at the electrocardiogram he's transmitting, even looking at pictures he's transmitting of the patient and calling in information. And that way I can provide the firepower, the medical firepower of a tertiary care hospital to a small little ship that's out in the middle of the ocean. So already we're leveraging what I'd call virtual medicine, telemedicine. And I believe that, A, that's good for people in austere environments, and B, that's going to be the game changer for cost.
Making headways on the cost or access to healthcare requires continued leveraging of information management or IT at all levels of care. Would you tell us more about how you are enhancing your use of healthcare informatics and also sharing electronic health data across DOD and VA?
Thanks, Gio. It's a great and very timely question. As we talked a little bit about before, we've had some separate stovepipes in the way each service runs its IMIT departments, both those that communicate the electronic medical record and those that also use digital systems for patient care, pharmacy dispensation systems, those kinds of things. We're going to create a defense health agency that will allow us to share all those services in one place. I've told people before, I don't really want to be in the IMIT business and have to own that in Navy medicine. I need it as a service, and I need it to be expeditious and available, but I'm happy to outsource that if I can have it reliably provided to me. The Army and the Air Force feel the same way. So we're looking at how we can create one sort of system that integrates all of our care systems together to make one large system. And then once we do that, the next question you may want to ask is, how do you put that together with the next continuum in military care, which is the VA, the VA system? So we're working very hard with the VA to try to find an integrated electronic health record, an IEHR is what it's called. So we're working very hard with that because right now one of the laments of some of our service members is when I go to the VA, they're compassionate. They're great. The care is great, but they can't see what happened to me when I was on active duty. I have to bring my paper record with me, and they have to flip through a paper record. Well, I have to tell you, the paper records should be like the dinosaur. It should become extinct at some point. And the fact that anybody has to carry around a paper record, I think, is an indictment on the system. And, of course, that's still commonly the way care is given in this country. But I think the VA and the Department of Defense are looking very closely at integrating a health record electronically. Again, we're looking at anything that can be done to capture what I believe is the desire of the upcoming generations to be connected more electronically. I'm generalizing a little bit here, but my 80-year-old patient wants to drive 40 miles and park in the parking deck and go to the pharmacy and actually see the pharmacist hand them the pills. My 20-year-old patient would just as soon have it delivered on their door because they hit something on their iPhone. So we're developing an iPhone app that allows you to refill your pharmacy. So here you are. You're somewhere. You're stuck in traffic. You know your medicine's running out. You go on the iPhone app. It's secure. And you all of a sudden punch in something. You get your pharmacy prescription number. It asks you, refill? Yes. Where do you want it sent? Home? Yes. You're done. And that saves money. It removes the middleman. It makes it expeditious. And it's one less car that has to be in the parking lot.
What does the future hold for Navy medicine? We will ask Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.